At Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome, listener, to this deep dive. Mm. Today, we are attempting to conquer, well, a metaphorical peak, this massive, seemingly impossible mountain of biological complexity. We're opening up Richard Dawkins' compelling work, Climbing Mount Improbable.
Yeah, this is such a key book, especially for anyone who's ever looked at, you know, a bird's wing or the human eye or even our own brains and just thought, wow, how could that possibly have just happened?
Right, that feeling of it's too perfect.
Exactly. Dawkins confronts that intuition head on.
He actually calls that feeling the argument from personal incredulity. Hmm. You know, the sense that something looks so well designed, so intricate, it couldn't possibly have come about gradually. It must have needed some kind of big leap.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is basically to explore the science that shows why that feeling, while understandable, is mistaken. We want to reveal that hidden gradual path up the mountain.
And Richard Dawkins is really the perfect guide for this. He's one of the world's most prominent evolutionary biologists and ethologists too. But his real gift, I think, is explaining science.
Absolutely. I mean, his academic background is solid D. Phil at Oxford, studied under a Nobel laureate, Nico Tinbergen, real grounding in animal behavior.
You're right. But then he became the Charles Simony Professor for the Public Understanding of Science at Oxford,
which is basically a role acknowledging his talent for making really complex ideas clear and engaging for, well, everyone.
Yeah. And he'd already written landmark books like The Selfish Gene, That Gene-Centered View of Evolution, and The Blind Watchmaker, which directly took on the argument from design.
So Climbing Mount Improbable feels like a natural follow-up, doesn't it? A deeper dive into how complexity arises using these incredibly powerful analogies.
Exactly. He doesn't just speak the facts. He helps you visualize the process. He makes the abstract tangible.
Okay. So let's get into that central metaphor then, the mountain. It really is the key to the whole book.
It is. He starts with the problem. Complex things, like, say, a fully formed eye. If that had to appear in one single massive jump.
Like, from nothing to a perfect eye instantly.
Yeah, the odds of that are astronomically small. Basically impossible. And Dawkins says that's like looking at the front face of Mount Improbable. It looks like a sheer vertical cliff, unclimbable.
That's the view that makes people say, see, it couldn't have evolved.
Right. But then Dawkins says, okay, let's walk around to the back of the mountain.
And what do we find there?
Not a cliff face at all. Instead, there's this long, winding, gentle slope. It might take a while, but you can definitely walk up it step by step all the way to the summit.
And that gentle slope, that's the mechanism.
Right. That's cumulative selection. That's the core idea. Evolution isn't like a single lottery ticket needing to hit the jackpot instantly. It's more like, well, tiny changes happen randomly, mutations, but the selection part isn't random at all if a small change gives even a tiny advantage.
Like just a little bit better vision or slightly faster speed?
Exactly. Even a 0.1% improvement. That change gets preserved, passed on, and the next small improvement builds on that.
So it's like stacking tiny advantages one after another over immense periods of time.
Precisely. Millions of generations. That accumulation turns the impossible cliff face into a manageable climb. It makes the improbable probable.
Okay, so if that's the principle, where does he show the evidence? What are the footprints on that slope? He starts with something quite surprising imperfections.
Yeah, the idea that evolution is more like a tinkerer than a master engineer. And the classic example is the recurrent laryngeal nerve, especially in giraffes.
Oh, this one's wild. Okay, so this nerve, it connects the brain to the larynx, the voice box.
Right. In a giraffe, you'd think maybe a 6-inch direct route, sensible design.
But that's not what happens, is it?
Not even close. The nerve goes from the brain all the way down the giraffe's incredibly long neck.
Okay.
Loops underneath a major artery near the heart, the aorta.
Way down on the chest.
Yeah. And then it travels all the way back up the neck to connect to the larynx.
That's ridiculous. How long is that detour?
It's something like an extra 20 feet of nerve. Completely unnecessary loop. It's terrible plumbing, really.
So why? How does that make sense evolutionarily?
Because it's a historical accident. It's a leftover from our fish ancestors. In fish, that nerve pathway was direct, running past an artery near the gills.
Okay, makes sense in a fish.
But as vertebrates evolved and necks got longer, that artery migrated down towards the heart. The nerve got hooked underneath it. And evolution couldn't just you know, snip it and rewrote it.
It could only stretch what was already there.
Exactly. It tinkered. It stretched the existing pathway over millions of years. This bad design is incredibly powerful evidence for evolution because no intelligent designer would build it that way from scratch. It shows history, constraint.
It's like a signature of the past etched into anatomy. Okay, so that deals with imperfection. But what about sheer complexity? The eye is always the go-to example for critics. Irreducible complexity, they call it.
Right, the idea that if you remove any single part, the lens, the retina, whatever, the whole thing stops working, so it couldn't have evolved step by step.
So how does Dawkins tackle that?
Well, first he points out something amazing. Eyes. Functional eyes of various types have evolved independently somewhere around 40 different times in the animal kingdom.
40 times? Wow. Okay, that doesn't sound like a one-off miracle.
Not at all. If it was so impossibly complex, why did it happen over and over? And then he walks us up that gentle slope for eye evolution. It's maybe 5 key stages.
Okay, what's step one?
Just a simple patch of light-sensitive cells on the skin. That alone is useful.
Right.
It tells you if it's light or dark, maybe detects a shadow passing overhead. Survival advantage.
Sure, better than nothing.
Step two, that patch sinks slightly, forming a shallow cup. Now you start getting directionality. You know roughly where the light is coming from. Another small advantage.
Makes sense.
Step three. The opening of that cup narrows. This creates a kind of pinhole camera effect. It actually sharpens the image quite a bit, even without a lens. More information, more advantage.
Okay, still gradual.
Step four, a clear, transparent layer forms over the opening, maybe just for protection initially.
Like a protective window.
Yeah, and then step five, that transparent layer develops a curve, starts to focus light more precisely. It becomes a lens.
And boom, you have a camera eye.
Exactly. And the crucial point is that every single one of those steps offers a concrete survival advantage, however small. You don't have to wait for the final perfect eye. Each improvement pays off immediately. Models show it could happen surprisingly fast, geologically speaking.
Fewer than 500,000 years, I think he says.
Something like that. Which sounds long to us, but in evolutionary time, it's pretty quick.
So the climb up Mount Improbable isn't always just about getting better in isolation, is it? Sometimes the environment is competitive.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That leads to what he calls evolutionary arms races. He uses the Red Queen metaphor.
From Alice in Wonderland. I love that one.
Me too. You have to run as fast as you can just to stay in the same place.
How does that apply to evolution?
Think predator and prey. Like cheetahs and gazelles.
Okay.
Gazelles evolve to run faster to escape cheetahs. So only the faster cheetahs survive and reproduce. But then the faster cheetahs put pressure back on the gazelle.
So only the fastest gazelles survive.
Exactly. It's this escalating back and forth pressure. Both species are evolving like crazy, running faster and faster. But
neither one really wins. They're just keeping pace with each other.
Right. Their relative success might stay roughly the same. That constant competition, that Red Queen effect, is a massive driver of extreme adaptations and complexity. You can't afford to stand still.
But it's not all conflict, is it? Complexity can also come from cooperation.
Definitely. And the example he uses for extreme coevolution is just mind-blowing. The fig and the fig wasp.
Ah, yes. The ultimate partnership.
It really is. It's symbiosis taken to an incredible level. Neither species can reproduce without the other. They are completely codependent.
So how does it work again?
Okay, so you have these tiny female wasps. They need to lay their eggs inside a fig. She crawls into a tiny opening in the developing fig fruit.
And brings pollen with her?
Yes, from the fig she grew up in. As she lays her eggs inside the fig's flowers, she pollinates them. The fig needs her for pollination.
And the wasp needs the fig as, like, a nursery.
Exactly. Yeah. Her offspring hatch inside, they feed, they mature, they even mate right there inside the fig.
Wow.
Then the newly mated females collect pollen from the fig's male flowers, crawl out, and fly off to find another fig tree to start the cycle all over again. The males usually die inside.
It's an unbelievably intricate, coordinated dance.
Totally. And it shows how natural selection can forge these deeply intertwined, mutually beneficial systems. It's not just about competition. Cooperation can drive complexity, too, sometimes in staggering ways.
Okay, so pulling back from these specific examples, what are the big sort of take-home messages from Climbing Mount Improbable, the things that maybe change how you look at the world?
Well, I think the biggest one is about trusting the process over our own intuition, that argument from incredulity. It's usually a failure of imagination, isn't it?
Because we struggle with the timescales involved.
Yeah.
Geological time is just vast.
Exactly. We see the complex end result, and we can't easily picture the millions of tiny steps it took to get there. So the first message is, question your gut feeling when something looks too complex to have evolved naturally. Our intuition isn't built for deep time.
That relates to the second theme, which is gradualism, right?
Absolutely. No giant leaps. It's all about small, advantageous changes adding up. Every complex structure is the result of a long, long series of tiny modifications.
And you know, that applies to so many things in life, doesn't it? Like learning a new skill or building something significant.
Yeah, it really does. You don't usually achieve mastery overnight. It's about consistent practice, small improvements day after day, climbing that gentle slope, not trying to leap up the cliff face.
Okay, and the third big theme.
For me, it's the power of DNA as the ultimate record. Dawkins talks about it confirming the history we infer from fossils and anatomy.
Like an independent witness.
Exactly. The genetic code is like this digital archive, stretching back billions of years, showing the relationships, the shared ancestry. It's concrete proof of the journey.
It really grounds the whole thing in molecular reality. Okay, let's talk about some of the memorable ways Dawkins phrases these ideas. He's so good with analogies.
He really is. They stick with you.
Like that core one we discussed. The sheer cliff face of Mount Improbable represents the fortress of creationism. But the back of the mountain reveals a long, winding, gently sloping path. This is the path of gradual, cumulative, natural selection.
Yeah, that just perfectly sums up the whole argument, doesn't it? The apparent impossibility versus the actual achievable pathway, it reframes the entire problem.
It really does. And then there's the idea about imperfection. Evolution is a tinkerer, not an engineer. This is why we see imperfections like the laryngeal nerve. It's the signature of history, not the work of a designer.
That's so crucial. Those quirks, those bad designs, are actually some of the strongest evidence we have. They only make sense in light of a historical, unguided process. An engineer would erase them.
Right. They point directly to the tinkering, constrained nature of evolution. And I love his description of DNA.
Oh, the river analogy.
Yeah. DNA is the river of information that has flowed for 3 billion years, and we are all eddies and whirlpools in that river.
It's beautiful, isn't it? It gives you this sense of being part of this vast, ancient, ongoing flow of life. It connects everything, makes DNA feel almost alive.
So thinking about applying these ideas,
sure.
How does understanding Mount Improbable help us in like everyday life or work?
Well, one area is definitely innovation and problem solving. The whole book is basically an argument for iterative design, isn't it?
Like agile development software.
Exactly. Don't try to build the absolutely perfect final product in one go that's trying to leap up the cliff face. Instead, build a minimum viable product, your first light-sensitive patch, get it out there, see how it works, and then improve it step by step. Climb the gentle slope of improvement based on feedback and small wins.
Precisely. It validates that approach.
Yeah.
Start simple. Iterate, accumulate improvements.
And the arms race idea, the Red Queen.
You see that everywhere. Think about businesses competing. One company brings out a new feature. The rival has to respond, maybe with something slightly better.
Just to stay competitive, to keep their market share.
Yeah, they're constantly adapting to each other, running hard just to maintain their position. It happens in technology, marketing, even politics sometimes. Understanding that dynamic can be really useful.
And maybe a simpler application is just patience.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Grasping the sheer timescale of evolution really fosters an appreciation for long-term processes.
Right. Significant change, whether it's personal growth or societal shifts, rarely happens overnight. It's usually the result of persistent, cumulative effort over time. Small steps consistently taken.
It's a good reminder not to get discouraged if you don't see massive results immediately. Keep climbing the slope. So wrapping up, What was the most maybe surprising or impactful thing for you revisiting this book?
I think for me, it's just the sheer elegance of cumulative selection as an explanation. It takes something that looks miraculous, the complexity of life, and shows how it can arise from these very simple, understandable principles. Variation, selection, heredity, and time. Lots of time.
Yeah, it's powerful because it's ultimately simple, yet it generates endless complexity. For me, I think it was the eye evolution example and realizing it happened 40 times. That really dismantles the idea of it being some unique, impossible fluke. It suggests complexity is almost inevitable given the right conditions.
It flips the perspective, doesn't it? Complexity isn't the improbable exception. It's the expected outcome of this process playing out over eons.
So the big takeaway is the incredible diversity and complexity of life isn't magic. It's the result of this patient, powerful, blind yet incredibly creative process of cumulative selection working over billions of years.
The world isn't a finished painting. It's a 4-billion-year-old story still being written.
A great way to put it. And maybe a final thought for you, the listener. Reflecting on that idea of the gentle slope, is there some impossible complexity in your own goals or challenges that might look different if you stopped staring at the cliff face and started searching for the first small step up the gradual path?
Something to ponder.
Definitely.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.